Translation. Whatever we can understand by the nomenclature, characteristics and features of a particular thing, superior, inferior or equal, eternal or temporary, is not created for any source other than of your Lordship, Thou so great. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The manifested world is full of varieties of created beings in 8,400,000 species of life, and some of them are superior and inferior to others. In human society, the human being is considered to be the superior living being, and amongst the human beings there are also different varieties, good, bad, equal, etc. But Narada Muni took for granted that none of them has any source of generation besides his father, Ramaji. Therefore he wanted to know all about them from Lord Brahma. Om Miganti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastachadi Satarine. Naham Veda Param Yasamin Na Param Na Samam Vibho Nama Rupa Gunerbhavyam Sadasat Kinchit Anyata. Whatever we can understand by the nomenclature, characteristics and features of a particular thing, superior, inferior or equal, eternal or temporary, is not created from any other source than that of your Lordship, Thou so great. So, you know, the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam is, I say all the Bhagavatam, it's not that the Bhagavatam starts in the second canto, because Prabhupada, you know, illuminates the whole Srimad Bhagavatam all the way through with his realizations. But particularly the first canto is setting the scene, at least story-wise. And then in this second canto we start to get, you know, the reciprocation between Parikshit Maharaj, who's been cursed to die within 7 days, and, you know, his guru, Shukadeva Goswami. So, you know, the first chapter of this second canto, Shukadeva Goswami, he delineates the nature of the people in this world. In other words, who was the Bhagavatam preaching? And so therefore he starts to explain about the process of Ashtanga Yoga. So Ashtanga Yoga means ultimately coming to the part of the point of Dharana. Dharana means to concentrate the mind. This is the whole point of yoga. And like, you know, we chant the Maha Mantra, the whole point is to listen to what we're chanting. Otherwise it's not so effective. So Dharana, then in the second chapter, you know, he starts to explain that there are two types of people who practice Ashtanga Yoga. And one is a person who practices it with desire. You know, everybody has some desire. We can't live without desire. So in the beginning, it may be that we have a desire for practicing devotional service, practicing Ashtanga Yoga. So then it explains that one would come to a point of dharana where desires are still there. We're concentrating, but we still have desires. It says, so in Bhagavad Gita, we learn how, you know, there are different paths, the paths of light and the paths of darkness. Is that right? The paths, you know, to the north when the sun's, when it's a light fortnight, to the south when it's a dark fortnight, So then one would practice that process. He would gradually go through the planetary systems to Shishama and then over up to the higher planets. And that means that he's not completely desireless, so he's having his desires fulfilled and experiencing this world, and gradually he'll come to Brahma Loka, and then he can go back to Godhead. So this is a long way. But then the one who has no desire, we know this one, that, you know, we start to meditate on the super soul. So this is very auspicious. And then in the third chapter it says that, you know, some people, they've got no desire to practice spiritual life, so they're advised to worship the demigods. And so then Shukadeva Goswami starts to explain that, you know, there's so many pitfalls in worshipping the demigods, don't go that way. So that's the third chapter. And then in the fourth chapter, you know, Parikshit Maharaj, he actually understands what the goal is now, devotional service. And so he starts to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kirat Hundara Palinda Pulkasa Abhira Shamba Yavanakasharya Ye Anya Tapapa Apashraya Shvaya. So, you know, we should take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whatever situation we're in. And so at that point, we come to chapter 5. And so the conversation changes. You know, Shukadeva Goswami is being asked by Parikshit Maharaj to, you know, tell him how to achieve the goal of life. And Shukadeva Goswami, he says, well, he starts, you know, emphasizing disciplic succession. He says, I'll quote from the Brahma, the Narada to Brahma Samvad, or the discussion. And so this is where the conversation changes to that of Brahma and Narada Muni. And here we're in the sixth verse. So what does he speak about? He doesn't speak about devotional service directly. He starts speaking about the creation. Because, you know, why would he speak about the creation? Because, you know, unless we have a reference point, it's pointless, you know, we can't go forward. We have to know where we are at this particular moment, how we're situated in this world, how we're trapped. Srila Prabhupada explains this in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, you know, about the modes of nature. He says it is the most confidential, well, not most confidential knowledge. He says it's knowledge better than what we've heard so far. That's the 14th chapter. You know, the 9th chapter's devotional service. But, you know, in order to get to that point, in the 14th chapter he's explaining that, you know, how we're trapped in these modes of nature. What's holding us back? And that's our work in this world. The whole process of devotional service is actually understood where we're attached, and then start to, next chapter says, then we start to cut the tree, the banyan tree of attachment. So find out where we're attached and start to work it. And then 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita says that, you know, who will take to this process? What are the qualities of that person? What qualities we have to develop simultaneously if we want to be successful? And in the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, everything's been covered. But, you know, Arjuna asks another question. What about somebody who falls in between the cracks, you know? Somebody who wants to practice, but he doesn't want to follow any authority. So it covers everything then. So, you know, these books are very methodical. So here, show the word here called nomenclature. Does anybody know what nomenclature means? Have you got any English scholars? I had to look in the dictionary, actually.
I got an idea, but I weren't sure. I thought, I'll just check. Naming things. It's naming things according to their particular category. Like in science, they'll have a certain nomenclature, won't they? You know, we can't really understand what they're talking about. In medicine, they'll have a certain nomenclature and like that. So, you know, you know, Narada Muni is asking questions from Brahma. He thinks Brahma is the creator. He thinks Brahma is actually the absolute truth at this point, but he's starting to think, you know, I'm not quite sure about Brahma. You know, I think there seems to be something wrong here. So I think it's the next verse. Let's have a look. Oh, one after that. My dear Father, you know everything and you are the controller of all. Therefore, may all that I have inquired for you be kindly instructed to me, that I may be able to understand. No, that's not it. No. Anyway, it's not. It's somewhere after this verse. I can't remember where it is. Anyway, what he says is that, but we are, you know, we are pushed to wonder: is there somebody more powerful than you? So, but you know, on this particular verse, he's speaking about, you know, his understanding that Lord Brahma is actually the absolute. So, on that basis, you know, we can understand that we can actually apply the philosophy of taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the point. So nomenclature. This world, another name for this world is it's the world of nomenclature. It's the world of names. Has anybody had any realizations on that? The world of names. You know, first, there's Gyan. It's a world of names, we accept that. But then, do we have any realization? When you go into the shopping centre? It's what?
You go into a shopping centre and what you look? Nike, Zara, it's all about names.
Names, yeah. Yeah, well, there's one called Oz. Yeah, there's one city in Russia that it's a huge place, they call it Oz, the Wizard of Oz. You know, you can go there and you can get anything. That's the, you know, everybody worships Oz. You know, I used to study geography. I didn't used to study from being, you know, like 5 or 6 years old. I had a fetish about looking at maps. And I don't know, even to this day, I don't know why, but, you know, it must be from a past birth or something. And, you know, I used to look, and I could look at them for hours. And when I went to school, and the geography teacher started asking questions about these different things, and I knew all the answers. It's the only thing I didn't know anything about. But then I realised, as I was getting older, that, you know, the places and the names of these different countries and the capitals, they're all changing. And I was really disappointed, actually. And then later on, you know, when I joined the movement, I started to visit my parents after some time. And then after some time, I saw that I didn't recognise anybody. You know that? And, I started to realise that, you know, everything's changing. And the names of shops changed. Everything started to change. And I appreciate what William Shakespeare said. What did William Shakespeare say? Have we got any scholars on? He said that a rose has the same smell no matter what you call it. Yeah, you can call it a rose, you can call it what you want. It's got the same smell. So this, you know, a human being or living entity in this world is the same. No matter what we call ourselves, no matter where we live, what we call that place, we are still the same individual, and we're actually different from this body. So this is the process of devotional service. It's to gradually fix us in that conception of soul, Prabhupada was leaving this world, and one of the last instructions that he gave says, we are not these bodies. You know, it wasn't anything esoteric. We are not these bodies. And don't think this won't happen to you. Two big conundrums. Somehow or other, you know, the material energy makes us think with this body. And, you know, whatever what's happening to everybody else, it won't happen to us. But, you know, it will. So, another example is, has anybody heard of Will-o'-the-Wisp? Will-o'-the-Wisp. So this comes from East Anglia. Anybody from East Anglia? Are you? Wait, Cambridge? Eh? Oh, Ipswich, that's why you know, is it? Because East Anglia is... East Anglia is full of bogs, isn't it? It's called the Fen Country. And in these swamps, you know, there's methane gas comes out because everything's decaying in the, you know, bloop, gas comes out. And sometimes this gas ignites, you know, when it hits the air, due to that combination, it bursts into flames. Has anybody seen that? And so, you know, I mean, nowadays they just build motorways across. But, you know, in previous times, 200 years ago, people used to have to cross these fens and they had to know the way. And sometimes, you know, a newcomer would have to come. And so they had one person called Jack the Lantern. Has anybody heard of Jack the Lantern? And, you know, he had a lantern. But he knew where to walk. And so sometimes if you were late to catch Jack the Lantern, you know, you would actually think, I wonder which way he's gone. Then you see a light. Ah, there he is. But it wasn't Jack the Lantern. It was a Will-o'-the-Wisp. And boom, in you go. So, you know, it means Will-o'-the-Wisp means it's here today, gone tomorrow. And when we follow the Will-o'-the-Wisp instead of Jack the Lantern, instead of the spiritual master, then, you know, so we shouldn't be late for class, right? When we follow the Will-o'-the-Wisp instead of Jack the Lantern, then we're in big trouble. This material world is like a Will-o'-the-Wisp. Will-o'-the-Wisp of Maya. So I thought we'd move on to another part of this class. So we've talked about, you know, the temporal nature of this world and the nomenclatures that we use. So, you know, this verse is talking about different, you know, qualities in this world. Rich, poor, young, old. Well, it's not talking exactly like that. It's giving, I'll read it out. It's talking about superior, inferior, equal, eternal or temporary, like that. So, and in the purport it goes into a bit more detail. But, you know, Narada Muni thinks that all these things come from Lord Brahma, but they're coming from Lord Krishna, as we know, from Mahavishnu. And one of the first things that's actually established after the process is established of creation, and it's confirmed, Purusha Shukta, that's the next verse, means that what's being said in Srimad Bhagavatam, in this fifth verse, fifth chapter, is being confirmed in all the scriptures, and that's called Purusha Shukta, in the Shuktas. And then it goes on to talk about where Parikshit Maharaj asks more questions of Shukadeva Goswami, and it says Bhagavatam is the answer. And then he starts to explain the basic philosophy of Lord Brahma still being... Now, this conversation is between Lord Brahma and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. And he's asking him the exact same questions. Four basic questions. Shall I read them to you? Anyway, he explained that... Where does everything come from in a nutshell? How is this material world founded? And how is the Lord's connection with it? Then he asked another question. He said, how is the Lord working in this material world? And then the next one, he asks, what is the ultimate goal of this work? And then the last one is, and how do we achieve that? And so Lord Brahma asks this question of Lord Vishnu, and he starts to answer, Jnanam paramam guyam me tad vijnanam samanvitam saharashyam tarangam cha rihanam garitam maya. He says, knowledge about me is very confidential. Jnanam paramam, paramam guyam, guyam means confidential. Jnanam paramam guyam me tad vijnanam samanvitam, and therefore it has to be realized in conjunction. It's not just that we can actually hear these books and make progress. We have to engage practically in devotional service. Jnanam paramam guyam me tad vijnanam samanvitam. Samanvitam means in connection. Saharasham tad angam cha. What's rahasyam? Anybody know what rahasyam is? You can look this way, it's okay. In class you don't have to bow down when they open the curtains. You can just lean forward. It's up to you anyway, but it disturbs the class. Everybody looks around, you know. What were we talking about? I forget as well. Hey? Rahasyam, that's it. What is Rahasyam? It's Prema Bhakti. If we want to get Prema Bhakti, that's a goal. Rahasyam. Pure devotional service. Tadangam cha. That's Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. So everything's included in this explanation, my Lord. I'm giving you the necessary paraphernalia. Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Tadangam cha. To achieve the goal, Saharasyam. Grihanam Garitam Maya. So you should take this process up. So he explains everything in that one verse, actually. But then he expands in the four seed verses, which is the next book one. What do the seed verses say? They're explaining what Parikshit Maharaj is asking here about all these different varieties in this world. And he says, whatever we see in this world is coming from me. I was here before anything was created. It's me only what's here now, and it'll be me only what's present after. And that's difficult to understand, is it? When we think of what do we think about when we think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Hey? What's that? Inconceivable. You have to speak up. I'm not very good at hearing, you know. You have to really speak.
He's on fourth dimension.
Fourth dimension, okay.
We can see things on three dimensions. He's on fourth dimension.
Okay, fourth dimension. And Pray Arjun Prabhu, you want some assessment? Everything comes from him. Okay, this is a bit more philosophical. Everything comes from him. So how does it, you know, we think of a person, you know, we know the ultimate person is Krishna playing the flute, but, you know, I tend to think, I don't know what you would do, that, you know, we think it, somehow or other he's in space, isn't he? You know, but how can he be in space, you know? And how can be nothing but a person? You know what I mean? He's got to exist somewhere. So the next verse starts saying that, if we see anything different from Krishna, then this is Maya. It's like this material world is a reflection of the real world. Everything's the opposite way around. So then we understand a higher concept that, you know, everything is Krishna. Everything is Krishna. Krishna's energy. And what is everything? What is it? It's spiritual. Okay? Everything's spiritual. And what's spiritual? Free from the three modes, yeah. But it's consciousness. So Krishna is, you know, supreme consciousness, super soul. Is what about this? Is this conscious? No. Who thinks it's conscious? Who thinks it's unconscious? But you know, it says the super soul's everywhere. It's in every atom. Isn't it? And the individual soul's there as well. There's nothing outside that, is there? In this material world. Everything's fully conscious in the spiritual world. There's no dichotomy. In the material world, there seems to be matter and there seems to be spirit. But it's all spiritual. It's just a manifestation of Krishna's energy in a different form, that's all. If the super soul starts to, you know, desire, you can actually say this, you can all start moving. Because the living entity is there. So we can understand that, you know, the living entity is gradually conditioned more and more until it becomes inanimate. So everything is Krishna, and a devotee learns to see that. Everything is Krishna's energy. Then what's the next verse? The next verse actually talks about prema bhakti. First two verses are speaking about sambandha in this chaturshloki. You know, understanding what we're trying to achieve, understanding Krishna, how he's working in this world. Then the next one is prayojan, or the ultimate goal, rahasyam, Srila Jiva Goswami. Prabhupada, in the first two verses, he says, in the first verse he comments that this is, that Krishna's a person. That's the first thing Prabhupada says. All the acharyas, they go into a little bit more detail, but for those, Krishna said, Krishna's a person. That's the first verse. And in the second verse, he's saying, some see on the platform of Yogamaya, or spiritual platform, seeing everything in Krishna. The others see on Mahamaya. That's the second verse covered. And then the third verse, he starts talking about Premanjana Chirita Bhakti Vilochanaina Santasa Daiva Hridayeshu Vilokayanti Yamshama Sundaram Achintya Gnasvarupam Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Ajami. That, you know, when we come to the point of pure devotional service, we actually see, what's that verse? Yatamahanti bhutani bhuteshu avicheshpanu pravishtana vaprishta apravishtani tatateshu natashyaham. And Krishna's making this point we've just made, that actually, as the universal elements enter into the universe, and simultaneously they don't. So similarly, I'm within, you know, within this material world, and I'm different from it. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, the highest philosophy. And when we understand Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva properly, we've got no option but to engage in pure devotional service. And so this is what Rai Prabhupada comments, it's seen from the platform, the eyes become anointed with love of God. And then the last verse is explaining, therefore, understanding all these first three points, we should engage in devotional service. There's nothing else to do, both in any time, place or circumstance. So this is the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. First it was in one verse, and then they put it into three. And this is what Lord Brahma heard from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then Narada Muni explained it to Vyasadeva. I think it was the fifth chapter. He explained it to Vyasadeva when Vyasadeva was, you know, I'm not satisfied. So he came and explained, he hadn't mentioned devotional service, and he explained it very briefly. And then now Vyasadeva started to expand on that in Srimad Bhagavatam. And now, you know, Shukadeva Goswami is expanding even further for our benefit. The other thing is shelter. So, you know, understanding this, we have different shelters in this world, don't we? Has anybody got can anybody tell me what particular shelter they may have? Hey? Paying?
Employer.
We take shelter of an employer. Any others? Shelter of the house. Shelter of the family. Immunity. Yeah. Take shelter of the vaccine. I'm not sure whether that's a one a good or a bad, I'll leave that. Community, take shelter. We take shelter of so many things. So many things in the mind we think we're going to be secure. But gradually, you know, as we go in devotional service, you know, it's taken away. You can't take shelter of that. When I was at school, I used to think that, you know, I used to think that, you know, I liked, you know, the athletics. So I used to think that if I just do what the athletics teacher tell me, everything will be all right, you know. And I generally took shelter of that. I thought, I just need to be told, just, you know, just take, follow what they tell me and everything will be okay. And then later on I found that, you know, both the school teachers, both the PE teachers, they were knocking off the headmaster's secretary. You know, I thought, what? I went to visit anyway, I'm not going to detail. I'm really disappointed. So gradually, you know, the shelters were being taken away. And we realised that as we go on in life, you know, I didn't realise how much shelter I took of the family. And my father passed away, and that was a bit of a, you know, downer. Then my mother passed away. And I thought, actually, there's nothing there anymore. The place I used to live and identify with as home, subtly, it's not there. So this is devotional service. What would a person who doesn't have the anchor of devotional service do? They try and take other shelters. So I won't go much further. It's nearly half past. Some other points I can make. So, you know, we can take shelter of Krishna in any situation in this world. The whole point is, whatever propensity we have, whatever particular propensity we have, we use that in Krishna's service. We take shelter of Krishna through that. We don't have to change anything. What's that? Iha yasya harer dashe kamana manasagira niklash pavasta sujivan mukta sa uchite. Even while we're in the material world, if we actually engage in devotional service according to our propensity, then we can be situated in the spiritual world. And that's our real shelter. Real shelter is to actually be situated in a service that actually suits us. There's a big difference between trying to do something that is not suitable and something which is suitable. If we do something unsuitable, it won't work. If we do something suitable, we'll naturally feel satisfied. So we can stop there anyway. Does anybody have any comments or questions? What did you? Port. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the nice class. One question, you mentioned that the third verse of the Chaturshloki, Yatamahanti Bhutani, it refers to Prema Bhakti. I didn't understand how it refers to Prema Bhakti.
Well, it means we see everything with the salve of love. You know, we're practicing devotional service now and gradually developing some sort of understanding of Krishna. Now is everything by 10th canto of of the Bhagavad Gita, we start to see Krishna in all, you know, all objects. And then, as we practice devotional service, this is why it's so important not just to try and understand theoretically. Then we get realization. We see how Krishna's working within the sphere of our activities. We see that, you know, there's no doubt that, you know, Krishna, in a particular situation, that was Krishna's intervention. I think everybody gets that realization at some point. And so then we become more attracted to Krishna because we realize he's actually helping us. And this grows until, you know, in Bhagavad Gita it says, we see Krishna in the sphere of all our activities and nothing else. And then when we see Krishna in the sphere of all our activities and that Krishna is everywhere, by that time we come to the point, you know, we're actually completely surrendered to Krishna. We just see Krishna, that's all. And, you know, Krishna's already reciprocated so much. So we're already on, you know, we're starting to see with those eyes. It's not suddenly we start seeing with those eyes. We're starting to see with it now. Affection's starting to develop. Some tastes, ruchi. We get in detachment by performing, then we become fixed. And then we get a taste anyway, but strong taste. And then attachment to service. This is nishkam karma. We're attached to the service. But then we become attached to Krishna. And then that becomes kevala bhakti. Whatever Krishna wants. And then bhava bhakti. I mean, rati, we you know, attraction. It's, what's it called? Attraction. Affection. And then that affection grows until it's actually full blown and it becomes pure love. Anything else? Okay, so we can stop there. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.